Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and this is Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Today, we continue our look at the electoral reform agenda, and our guests are Maria Chin Abdullah. She's the MP for Petaling Jaya. She's my MP, so in fact. So I'm going to hold her to a higher standard during the interview. I also have Dr. Yaqob Tobing. He's the president of the Lemena Institute, that works in civic issues. And also Hada Gumai, former election commissioner of Indonesia, and I guess he's been on the show before, so I'm very happy to have him back. Thank you all.
Glad to be back here.
Good. Okay, before we get into our conversation, I just have to go through some news issues that we've had today. The Senate, which is the upper house, of course, passed the Universities and University Act, Colleges Amendment Bill. Now, what this does is it abolishes the provision that prevents students from participating in politics. You remember, we had many instances of students participating in various capacities, then hauled up by their universities and ensuring a kind of conflict between students and their universities. Now, that's going to be put aside. What we are expecting also from the ministry, and this is the long-term plan, by 2020, the ministry promises to replace the Universities and University Colleges Act 1971. AUKU is the acronym that's become quite vilified in recent years, seen as an oppressive tool, a tool that in many ways this government is committed to removing, among many others. Now, next week on the 28th of December, we're going to be having a panel on the higher education agenda, reform agenda, and we're going to be including a discussion of AUKU then as well. So look forward to that. That's next Friday, the 28th. Speaking of education, our education minister, often, as he puts it, misquoted by the media, has dialed back on this idea or suggestion that he seemed to have put out in public that he was encouraging teachers from the peninsula who are in Sabah and Sarawak to use that opportunity to proselytize, basically evangelize. He says that he wasn't, in fact, trying to evangelize. He says the expression da'wah in Malay does not mean to convert non-Muslims to Islam, but in his idea, it's about doing good works. Now, this is Mazli Malik explaining his position.
Doa ni seperti mana kita convertkan orang. Jadi bawah ini bila saya katakan bahawa guru-guru yang mengajar di Sabah dan Sarawak itu medan dakwah diterjemahkan kepada usaha untuk convert, untuk memaksa orang memasuk apa ni ke dalam Islam. Ini kefahaman yang sempit tentang dakwah. Dakwah adalah mengajar kepada kebaikan. Walaupun kita mungkin mengajar bahasa Inggeris, kita mengajar matematik, kita mengajar PJ. Jikalau kita bertujuan untuk memandaikan orang, untuk menjadikan orang lebih sihat, untuk menjadikan orang lebih intelek, itu juga dakwah dalam kefahaman orang Islam. Kefahaman dakwah itu tidak boleh difahami dengan gerak kerja misionari semata-mata.
Minister of Education, Mazli Malik, a man who often finds himself having to, well, explain himself after he's made that initial statement. Well, now we move on to Cameron Highlands, a by-election they're expected next month. And if you missed the news yesterday, here's a quick recap of what's going to be happening in Cameron Highlands. We'll be right back. Okay, so those are some quick facts about the upcoming by-election. Important because the Election Commission also said that it had some firsts, including it's going to be live streaming the counting process. I'm going to ask Maria about that and how she sees this by-election. But before that, just a quick note about the politics of this by-election. In the previous election in May, Barisan Nasional and its component party, MIC, stood. It got about 42% of the vote. Pakatan Harapan had a DAP candidate. It got just under 40% of the vote. PAS received less than or just under 15%, while Parti Socialist Malaysia and Berjasa together got less than 4%. So PSM got 3%, just about, and Berjasa less than 1%. Maria, you know, since you know, you were involved in the politics of the day as well as a parliamentarian, but you're also somebody with a strong agenda to reform the electoral system. This by-election coming with some of its firsts, including the the, you know, live streaming of the counting. Were you impressed by the conduct of the Election Commission?
On the Cameron's?
On the Cameron's by-election and generally as well.
I think he has done well so
this
far.
This is Art Harun, yes, the Art Election Harun. Commissioner.
And recently he announced that, you know, the election results will actually be televised. So this is the first time that we ever have the counting being televised. And I feel that it's a step forward because, you see, what happened in Cameron's was actually why we have having a by-election is really because there was vote buying and all that. And this is one way to say that, you know, we're trying to make it a clean and fair election this
time
around.
Because the vote buying did not happen, you know, happened during the campaign process.
Yes.
If we have any sense of the monitoring processes, the question of observers who are going to be essential to make sure that all the participants play by the rules.
Yes. This new election commission has in previous by-election, they have allowed Bursay to actually be the election observer. So I'm sure he will continue. And definitely this election will be very much a watch over.
Okay, so we're looking at the situation in Malaysia improving in terms of, I guess, the trust deficit that was there with the electoral system before the general elections that we had recently in May. And you leading the, you know, many of the street protests where people really were demanding a free and fair election. And I understand that, you know, Pak Yaakob and Pak Hadar, you're here to help us in that conversation. You're sharing the experiences of Indonesia in, you know, to a Malaysian public that wants to understand how to begin. Can I ask Pak Yaakob, 20 years ago when Indonesia was starting to rethink its system because of the breakthrough it had with the fall of President Suharto, what were the main concerns? What were the conversations about in Indonesia 20 years ago?
That's about to building the you know, trust to the government, and then we would like to democratize our system, and for the purpose we'd like to have the democratic and accountable election first in order to build the institution that can be trusted to conduct the election, and then we have a new government and a new system.
Right. But how fundamental did that conversation have to be? I understand you were involved in the Constitutional Draft Committee that had a nationwide conversation about changing the constitution to reflect Indonesian values, the new values that were being forged.
Yeah, you know that our initial constitution, the original one, has a two side of it. In one side, this is a very idolized and also very, very respected constitution because it contains the founding values of our independence, of our nations and our country, which is framed by our founding fathers and mothers. And on the other hand, it has, you know, weaknesses because it was tainted by these fascist ideas, because the articles was framed under the supervision of the World War II Japanese administration.
This is the 1945 constitution.
That's right. the prevailing constitution that also used by the Pa'arto, the New Order. So we cannot escape from an authoritarian character of this system. That's why we agree we have a national consensus to democratize this constitution in a condition that we should maintain the founding values, we should maintain the unitary republic, we should maintain the presidential system, and we should conduct it in accordance with the constitution itself, because it has an article which provides you with the procedure how to change or to amend it. That's how we begin, and then we should conduct it by a democratically elected body.
That's okay. Okay, so you've mentioned the word democracy a lot, and I wonder, you know, Maria, if we in Malaysia look at our constitution, I know in some ways it's a kind of sacred book. We often refer to, everybody refers to the constitution, as it were, but do we think about it enough? Can we say that this is a constitution that is in fact democratic? Or does it have, you know, interestingly, this dual character that the Indonesian, you know, Indonesians themselves thought existed in this in the constitution? Have we had that conversation here?
We are beginning the conversation, but I guess that if you are looking in the context of election, in the constitution, there's still the 9A, Article 9A, which actually doesn't allow us to challenge the electoral roll once it's gazetted in parliament, and that becomes a problem because if the roll is not clean, we can't challenge it, and that roll, clean or unclean, gets to be presented at the election day. So even like this coming by-election, there will be flaws within the electoral roll because we can't challenge it anymore.
Right, so where are those articles coming from? Is it there to protect the government of the day? Is it about saying, you know, you don't want oversight over the decisions that are made by government agencies? Why put in a provision like that?
Well, it was actually as a result of the Likas by-election, where there were actually discrepancy in the electoral roll and was brought to court, and the court says that, you know, the election was void because there were flaws within the roll. And subsequently, it resulted in an amendment to 9A.
So that protected the government of the day.
Protected.
Do you see that in the conversations you're having with Malaysians? Are they talking about the constitution? Are they just talking about the system, the electoral system, without a reference to the constitution?
Of course, my interaction is still very limited. Yes, I get the some ideas that actually very little. In fact, I got the impression that if the Malaysian want to change the, you know, things in the constitution, it'll take longer time. So they rather look on something on the level of laws that would, because they are really looking to have some change, some reform before the next election. I mean, this is a communication that I got.
Right, so we are looking at procedures and operations,
yes,
rather than looking at the fundamental issues.
Yeah, I get the impression.
And I think your impression is correct, and I'll just say, put it there. Do you think that's a problem?
Well, again, it's difficult for me to say, because if I say a problem in my country, for sure, as Jacob shared with us, it won't be a problem for Malaysia. So it's really, you have to look at your own context. It is a problem in Indonesia, because now, after we went through, and I try to look back, yes, because we changed our, constitution is really a social contract for, you know, the people of the whole nations. So principle, if we want to democratic country, those principles should be completed inside the very basis regulation, which is the constitution. So in Indonesian context, yes, it is very relevant. For example, at that time, We have no article at all about value principle of democratic elections. Yeah. Now we do have it, you know, free and fair there. In Indonesia, we call it luber jurdil, langsung umum, bebas, rahasia, jujur, and adil. Now, election is always rely on the EMB, the Election Commission. Now it's there. We got it through the amendment of the Constitution that we have to have Election Commission, which is national, permanent, and independent. Because all, and also the system of direct presidential. Because all this already there, then when you move to the lower regulation, which is the law, then that gives you a very basic and very strong guidance.
Right. So wonderful. So you're saying a strong foundation builds a good system, right?
Yes.
And that's what the general principle I get. Yeah. Okay, we're going to be back with more. I've been speaking to Pak Yaakob Tobing, president of Institut Lamena, and also Pak Hada Gumai from, or rather, former Election Commissioner of Indonesia, and also Yang Berhormat Maria Chin Abdullah. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, I have Yang Berhormat Maria Chin Abdullah, MP for Petaling Jaya. We'll also have Pak Hada Gumai, former Election Commissioner of Indonesia, and also Pak Yaakob Tobing, President of Institut Lamena. We were talking about the importance of having that conversation about the Constitution, the foundations on which we might build a democratic electoral system, right? Among many other systems, right, that that the Constitution forms the basis of. Now, one thing that's often said, and we could just kind of look at this particular issue of first past the post. First past the post is the existing system, legacy of British rule. It is seen as a system that in which winners take all. Right?
Right.
And often the proponents of it say it is a system that produces stability, so on and so forth. But it is a problem. And we've seen it demonstrate over and over again because the popular vote is won by a party that cannot come to power because so on and so forth. With all these issues, Maria, where is it at? Because a couple of years ago, I know everybody was talking about proportional representation as this panacea. It was going to solve all our problems. Suddenly, we would be better if we had proportional representation. That conversation seems to have died down over the years. Where is it now? Where is this conversation now?
Well, actually, we have to start the conversation again to review what is best. Because proportional representation has got variation, yeah? So we have to actually start talking about it. Most important is the cabinet has to start talking about it, whether it wants that that review to happen. Then only the process can actually start.
Okay, yeah. Now cabinet has outsourced this conversation to a committee, right? That is headed by Tan Sri Rashid. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, we now have the Electoral Reform Committee looking in with a two-year mandate to look into the system plus the processes. So hopefully they will start that conversation going with all the stakeholders. I think that's important because to make changes is very difficult and you need to have the buy-in. And we need to actually have a system that really works for Malaysian and understood. Otherwise, we will not be able to have to bring in any proportional representation.
Okay, let's go back to the question of values and Pak Tobing, Pak Yaakob. The issue of a winner-take-all system, right? Is that something that Indonesians themselves would want? Would they want a winner-take-all system? What were they used to? Why did they change it to one that was much more inclusive and democratic?
Yeah, that's because of the fundamental of our existence as a nation. That's how we see ourselves as a nation. We are very diverse, but we are one. So unity in diversity, that's the very principles in our self. So we should project this idea into the lower policies, lower institution, we should be, you know, very, very strict in our hierarchy of thinking. That's why in our election system, we do not use this, you know, winner takes all. For instance, in our presidential election, it's not just electoral votes that matters, but also popular votes. For instance, 50% in national, but it should be distributed at least 20% in each provinces. So it means all other provinces, the outer islands, will be counted, you know. You know, the demography, the population distribution in Indonesia, almost 60% of the people live in Java, and the outer island only have 40%, while the total area is Java is just how many percent? It's very small, and 40% of Indonesian peoples are Javanese, so there might be a kind of feeling, oh, this is this system, if we do not careful in designing, it will just you know. Sided to one of these biggest people population.
So this is one of the problems that we see in much of Southeast Asia: the majoritarian rule. Right, we have majoritarian politics where demography or your demographic preponderance determines the politics of the day. The fact that Indonesians chose not to allow this, was there any resistance? Were there people in Java and Javanese saying, why should we yield to minority groups, people in the outer islands, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, certainly. And let me give a clarification here. From the beginning, when we have election in Indonesia, from the start, we have a system of proportional. So we never change, except we changed lately, in 2004, 2009, from the closed list to the open list. Now, there's always a debate whether we want to move to a majoritarian, which is first past the post, or we remain or fix a little bit, adjust the proportional. There's always that. But then it's always the conclusion after long debate, inclusive and participation process, we do that. We hear to a lot of people all over Indonesia. Then we still come to the parliament doing this with the government. They still come to the conclusion, no, the best system for Indonesia is proportional system. So, but again, I would like to bring the issue of the process, what is also very important in deciding where you want to go.
It's not just the conclusion, but the consultation.
Yeah. Before, I was trying to explain to you about the amendment. There are issues there, there are new issues that we put there. But again, that's become a real issue after our People Consultative Assembly, civil society, all stakeholders brought and says, this is the important issue that we should put in our constitution.
Right.
That's why it takes a long time to do that, because they want really to hear. Pak Yaakob have been saying these days, and I just realized, because I was bringing to him as the activist, this is the draft, Pa. We have a good draft here for you. Please debate this and so on. And Pak Yaakob says, we never have a draft, actually. We just start listening to different people. We go to every regions where they, okay, what do we need? I mean, say it to us, bring it to us. So they work and debate together. They put all those things on the table in the parliament, and then they decide.
Are we likely to have that, Maria? That process of consultation, going and speaking to ordinary Malaysians, understanding what their concerns are, values are, and so on?
I hope so. But I think that, you know, why we want to review the system at this juncture is really about representation, because that is part of democracy. We want to not just have A or B. We want to have more choices so that we know that, you know, this group or this person is going to represent my interest. And if they don't, I have the right to actually vote them out. So it is really about choice rather than which system is better.
Whereas, but I want to ask you, because we're running out of time.
Yes.
Very quickly, if you could keep the first past the post system or get rid of it, what would your choice be? Where would you vote? Remember, I voted for you, so I just want you to know.
Where would I? I would vote for the proportional representation.
You would. Okay, yes. Wonderful. We'll come back and continue the discussion about electoral reform. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Pak Yaakob Tobing, president of Institut Lamena, and also Pak Hada Gumai, former election commissioner of Indonesia, and also Maria Chin Abdullah, my MP in Petaling Jaya. Petaling Jaya is a huge constituent. I remember being shocked when Petaling Jaya became this monster constituency. Not the biggest, apparently.
Not the biggest,
yeah, but a big one, a really big one. Must be a headache trying to administer this and service your constituents. But I guess you are also, as an MP, really tasked with changing laws or making laws. That's your, I think, more than checking on services and drains that have been, you know, blocked and cats caught up in trees, right? So I'm very excited that you're in Parliament and pushing this agenda. Now, what I understood yesterday, we had some guests also from Indonesia, Pak Ramlan Basuki and Ms. Titi, both explaining to us this extraordinary situation where every election was an occasion for a post-mortem after the election.
Yes.
A post-mortem, a decision about what had gone wrong, what was the effects of the system. Mm. Because sometimes you can create a system, but it has unintended consequences.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Pak Hada, explain to us what this thing that happens in Jawa. How did this culture of having a post-mortem, was it mandated, or is it something that people spontaneously feel is necessary?
Well, in general, I guess it's just you found out after you do it, okay? Some people can make predictions, some people think, no, we have to plan and do it very quick, the whole thing. So I think Indonesian experience mix of that. Now, I give you one example. For example, first election in 1999, first democratic election, and the parliament and government, also with the help of team, Pak Ramlan was the head, drafting the political laws, one of these election laws. They think the best election commission is representative from all political parties, where everybody can watch each other and representative of the government. But then, after we do it, Pak Yaakob was there as one of the chairman of the committee. They tabulate the result, they know the result, but they cannot ratify, decide this is, okay, this is the result. Why? Because a lot of representatives of the political party, they didn't get any seat. So they don't want to sign. If you give a seat to us, then I will sign. So then...
Oh, you mean they were bargaining with the committee?
Yeah. So they cannot sign it. And we were so worried. I was one of the observer, you know, coordinator observer in Indonesia. Oh, this is going to be a total disaster. But then in our regulation, as the most responsible of the election is our president, so they bring it to the president Habibie, and Habibie signed it. So we got the result. So then from that, we learn that the form of the election commission, which is represented from the political parties and the government, is not a good model for Indonesia. Right away after that, we have this amendment, we have to have an independent one. So then, you know, through that we learn. But there are also some thing that many things happen. So maybe this is also that maybe Malaysia should also not expect. I mean, I seen your list what you want to reform. That's quite a long list, you know. So it's 2 years, and then years how to make it really into the law. So maybe you need to be ready. It will take some time.
Okay.
Maybe you need to be ready also some regression of ideas coming in the next election law, you know.
Sure.
This has happened in Indonesia, so...
Okay, could you explain what do you mean by regression?
Well, this is a good example, and I'm directly involved in it. The last law, which is the earliest one for the local elections, the parliament have an idea of, oh, we have to make sure, well, this is what they bring to the public. We want to make sure that all regulation made by the Election Commission really accordance to the law what they meant, those articles. So the Election Commission have to consult before they make this regulation. Now, what's the problem is the consultation result, the result of those meeting binding to Election Commission. For us, no way. Because what? Because they come with an idea what they really, you know, their short-sighted interests. So they try to control us. So I have, with the other commissioner last time, to challenge this article. I brought it to the Constitutional Court. Because we are the independent election commission. So, I mean, consultation is fine. But if you're bind to that, that become an no longer independent election commission.
Right. So, you had a constitutional court, though, that made this decision.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Okay. So this is, again, you have, well, in our case, yes, we have to be ready. It's a long process, come regression, backlashing, and so on. So you have to really to maintain this reform to go on until, you know, to the direction that you want. Maybe this is something
to expect. Okay, yeah. Pak Yaakob, yes. How passionate were the conversations in Indonesia at that time, 20 years ago, when talking about this? And do they continue to be conversations that are very full of passion with divergent views, people feeling very strongly?
Yes, so many groups in the society, you know, submitted their ideas, proposal, and we also organized hundreds of public hearings, not only in Jakarta, but in every regions. We also organized some kind of focus group discussions, or even inviting those opponents from the separationists. And we listened to them all, and we opened the process for direct consultation, and also for the written ideas, and also we installed a TV for direct broadcasting.
Right, so it was a very open process.
Very open process, and it resonated with the ongoing political challenges.
Maria, you know, do we have the patience? What's your feeling on the ground? People want this reform right now. Are they willing to accept that it will take time, partly because of the legal frameworks that need to be changed, but also that nobody really knows sometimes that an idea would work or not?
Yeah, that's true. But I think that we should start the conversation. It has started to some extent. And you see, because when Bersih started with talking about electoral reform, the right to vote and all that, that is the conversation that, you know, that people have to come out to vote. So people are actually looking at and able to now understand what it means by redelineation, what it means by electoral roll registration. So I hope that, you know, it will extend to much deeper conversation about the system, about how we're going to reform the process. Because I think that what we are trying to do here is really to create competition amongst the parties and candidates. So then people will feel that, you know, they have representation and they have choices. And that's part of the democratic process.
Okay, but will people be disappointed if this conversation just carries on as a conversation and no decisions are made? I mean, surely there must be a timeline when the conversation ends and a decision is made. And what is that going to be? Do you have a sense of what the timeline might be?
Well, they gave the Electoral Reform Committee a timeline, 2 years. So by 2020, we will have some idea where we are going in terms of electoral system. The processes can start now. Because if you look at what the Election Commission chief is doing, he is starting to review the processes and working on them. So he had actually called a few meetings, and I was part of the consultation, looking at electoral roll and the processes that have actually been flawed. So I think that we hopefully in 2 years' time, we are ready and stakeholders are consulted, particularly opposition as well as ruling.
Okay, but can we expect a new electoral system by GE15? So let's say the normal span of a government's tenure, 4 years, Will we have that? Is that what you want to see?
I want to see that.
You want to see that? Okay. That's why I voted for you. Okay. We'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Maria Chin Abdullah, MP for Petaling Jaya, Pahada Gumai, former Election Commissioner of Indonesia, and also Pak Yaakob Tobing, President of Institut Lamina. Both the gentlemen are from Indonesia, have come, and they're wearing, of course, wonderful Batik Indonesia, I think it's called. Coming here to share your experiences with us. Pak Yaakob, since you, Institut Lamina, works on civic issues and stuff. Could you explain to us how important civil society activism, public participation is in something that often is seen as abstract, legalistic, that has only to do with the people in parliament and not necessarily us ordinary people?
Yeah, I can say that the successful of the amendment process, one of the factors of is the active civil society in form of these CSOs and, you know, academics, peoples, and every segments of the people. They are very active, and that's the spirit of the how we can, you know, proceed with our process, and also this makes things very lively. So we can exchange views, and we are in a good spirit. We are doing something for the betterment of our country, something like that. So civil society is a very important factor in our process.
But Hada, people often think of civil society as homogenous, or we think they're all progressive, because there are different types of values out there in society.
Sure.
How do you hold them together? Because it's going to get very noisy, isn't it? It's going to get messy. There are people who are going to be very passionate. They're going to disagree with each other.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't accept the decisions that are made after the conversation is ended.
Sure.
What do we do with that?
Well, of course, a coordination, communications, and division of issues. That's how we work together. We have all the belief that working together actually is the best way. Because we're facing some so principal issues, issues of how to amend, this is the first 5 years, for example, how to amend our constitution, something before mostly Indonesians see as like a holy Bible, you know, holy Quran, and you cannot change. But it happened because we all work together. Now, there's always one or two main player of the in civil society who focus on these issues, for example, and the other focus the other, and we make a coalitions, and we try to work on with every single group, not only in the parliament, because okay, we have the same idea, so we only communicate with that. No, we work more, in fact, with the other who open into those ideas. And strategically, sometimes we say something, okay, if we do this way, you got the benefit of this. And to the other group, we say the same thing also. If you do this way, you get the benefit. So everybody thinks, you know, this is good, because this is important. If we need to find every party's belief that is benefit for them, all of them, for the public also.
Wow.
So, you know, this kind of strategy. We talk to the medias. And we have to realize, not only satisfied only one meeting, we have to go regularly. So very often we have to make them, especially in the parliament, this is your own idea. You will get the name of this, you know, and not us. For us, the important thing is the issue. As long as they adopt it, we are very happy.
Okay.
You know,
oh, interesting, those kind of interesting strategies, you know, often used by parents. It's got reverse psychology, I think. our enlightened self-interest, I think Alexis de Tocqueville talked about that in, is a crucial element in a democracy, right?
It
people
is.
All, out of their selfish wants, actually achieve higher order ends. Now, Maria, your government has been pretty wishy-washy on some issues. Now, talk about local government elections, right? We had the Prime Minister saying no. We had other ministers saying, no, no, the conversation's not ended. Why is there no consensus in government about some of these basic issues? Will we achieve them? Will we achieve the consensus within the Pakatan Harapan executive, the cabinet, about what they want to achieve?
I guess people are still caught with the race argument. In local council elections, it's a myth, yeah, because if we have the election, it is not to the disadvantage of the Malays, because if you look at the geographical coverage now, Malays are in the majority in most urban areas, including the rural. So I don't think that, you know, that argument that, you know, it will disadvantage the Malays will actually work.
Oh, this was the Prime Minister's argument,
yes,
right?
That's right.
I want to ask you this simple question. One of the practices of Malaysians is that many Malaysians do not vote where they live and work. They work from the place
somewhere
of origin,
else,
right?
Yeah.
And isn't that something that needs to be addressed? Because if people are not voting, so if you want local government elections, people must be voting where they live and work. Will they change that?
Well, by right in our laws, if you move to another location, you have to change your IC.
We all know what the practice is.
We don't. Yeah, so there has to be some practices in place to actually ensure that, you know, you register and you vote where you stay. Because then it is actually your identity with the community, because you can't be having someone staying 10 years away from this place and come back 5 years once to vote. I think then it's not about representation. So whether we want to do that or not is also about a political will, because to some extent, you know, there's also the transfer of voters here and there in order for a particular party to actually win. That has to be changed. But local council election will need to also happen, because it is not just about just the third level, but it is really to make our local councils more effective and to know that they are accountable to the voters. Otherwise, now we are complaining, the drains are not cleared, MPs have to come in to look at the park and stuff like that.
So the restoration of the third level of government that was there at the start of our nation, that was removed because, I think partly because socialists were winning local government elections. I think that's just a historic fact. Jacob, the question of race is very interesting in Malaysia. And I know you've been an ambassador for your country. You were in South Korea, I believe, is one country that you were there. When you look at Malaysia's race problems, do you think it's insurmountable? I mean, you have race and sub-ethnic groups and Javanese and Batak people and so on, and so people from Sulawesi and people from West Papua. Is the race issue something that cannot be resolved in a way that makes for the democratic system?
It can be resolved. We have proven it. We have more than 1,000 tribes and ethnicities and more than 700 languages. And you know, Javanese is 40%, but we do not use Javanese language as a national language. It's a Malay-based Indonesian language.
Which is a minority. It's a minority language.
Only 4% of the people. And we have, in transit to our daily system. Of course, there is still problem with that anyhow, because in our unity in diversity, both should be in balance, you know, so that our diversity become the positive potential in if it is realized, rather than become like convergent. So I think Yeah, it will be still our potential of power to the futures.
It's a nice sentiment, but Haddad, do you think, I mean, I know I'm asking a difficult question, very quickly, do you think we can overcome this race obsession that we have that affects also the way in which the electoral system is designed?
Again, as you said, it's not an easy... in Indonesian context, I like to put it rather, it's very common, and we still have the problem, actually. I mean, if Pak Tobing say in general, yes, I agree, it's solved. I guess it's natural. People, when they do in the election, they pick their own race, groups, identities, and so on. But the basis value that, no, we should go beyond that. Look at more the competency and so on and so on, integrity of our representative, rather. So though we have still a group who really fight back, relate to the religions they believe, the ethnic they believe, but for Indonesian in general, it is it's much smaller issues, not really Indonesian in common. Because they see we are all the same Indonesian. We are, though we are different. Pak Yaakob from Batak, I'm from West and South Sumatra, my parents. But again, we are see the same. So now go back to your difficult questions.
That's why we have you here, to answer the difficult questions that we don't want to answer.
I cannot say it guarantee it will clear the problem that you are facing. If you change the system, though, yes, I believe proportional really, the strength of the proportional, the real main character of proportional system is really the representativeness. If you're a big group, then you have a bigger representative. You're a smaller group, then you have a smaller. You're much smaller, you are less representative. Where in the other system not. But again, to make sure that this is really work as I explained this, that really you have to see it in your own country social and cultural development.
Right.
It's not like a given things. We should systematically, intentionally nurture it.
Okay. So we'll come back to that very idea.
I didn't really answer that.
But it's a good one. It's a good try. And we'll be back. Okay. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with Misha Rajkutu. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Ambassador Dr. Yaakob Tobing, President of Institut Lamena, also Pak Haddad Gumai, former Election Commissioner of Indonesia, and Gang Rohmat Maria Chin Abdullah, MP for Petaling Jaya. And my MP, I voted for you. Well, I could take my vote back, come G15.
So
this is how I threaten. This is how you should all threaten our MPs. Okay, looking forward. What should Malaysians be mindful of in this process? Some of it, the discussions are happening behind closed doors and so on and so forth. But what should we be invested in? How can we participate?
In the elections?
In this process of electoral reform.
I feel that in the electoral reform, in many ways, we have been participating through the, whether it's a street demonstration or objecting to the redelineation, people have been participating. But what you are asking is really the system. Yeah.
And if also now that we've won, in some ways people have won, right? We had the big political change. We'll say, oh, well, fine, you know, we'll outsource it. You know, Maria is now in parliament. Let her do the heavy lifting. Is there still a role for the public?
And how? Definitely there's still a role for public as well as, of course, the coalition called Bersih, to actually make sure that what has been promised will actually be delivered. So the public will have to continue to remind members of parliament as well as the cabinet that they still want clean and fair elections.
Yeah. What if they wanted local council, local government elections? Should they go on the streets in parts of the country where it really matters, in the cities, if they want elections? Would that make a difference to your government? Would they respond positively to people going in the streets saying, we want local government elections?
They can go to the streets to demand for local council elections. But I think that this whole local council elections will need consultation and buy in a lot of it. It's not that the ground doesn't want. It's really about the political parties and also whether the government wants to actually push it through.
Right.
Because
so the
resistance
parties...
is not coming from the ground.
Okay.
The resistance is coming from the top. From
the political elite. Pahada, yeah. What do you think, you know, especially in the terms of vocabulary, I wonder how important is it for people to understand some of these abstract things. You know, you talk
it
about
is.
Closed list, open list.
Yes.
Actually, it's like a whole field. You could go to university studying electoral systems, couldn't you?
Yeah. Well, not really. But again, yes, we have to try... that a lot of people knows what is this thing exactly, what's the difference, and what can you get if you change to this system? Is this really answering the problem that you face, you know? So that's very important. Of course, at the beginning, only a few people knows, but those who really study about this knows, the politicians who have been enjoying because they want to see it, you know. Yes, we have the obligation to teach, to socialize this issue so that people really know exactly what is happening. So this is what we try to do our best doing this process in Indonesia. So this is also that, I learned that you've done some group have done, and in fact, formal, you know, institutional reform committee or something.
That's right.
Some done the draft. The other group done the political financing, political funds,
yes.
Laws done it. And, you know, we feel that we already have enough all this information. We know exactly what we want. But I think that's not enough. Again, you have to make sure. But once the public really show it, we want this. This is exactly what we need for our country. Then the parliament, who's making the law into reality, they have no other choice. Because the whole, you know, the nation wants it.
But Jacob, do you think that democracy is hard work? Hard work for citizens, that they have to be invested in understanding issues, they have to go and do their homework, they have to educate each other. Is it hard work? And Indonesians resistant to hard work? Because I want you to shame Malaysians into hard work.
Hard work. But, you know, that's the responsibility of being a citizen, of course. So back to the system, we must build a system. In this case, the subsystem, the election is the subsystem of the whole system of our country. So it should be subjugated to the main system. In this case, to the main understanding of our existence again.
Right.
That's the point.
Okay, so we're coming back. And Maria, I give the last word. The question of citizenship and the responsibility of being a citizen. Do you think most Malaysians fully understand what it is to be a citizen?
Well, they have to actually be pushed to actually make it into an action. Because nowadays it's easy to be on a computer than to be on the streets, right?
Yeah.
But I guess that Bursay actually pushed the boundaries and they were able to respond, not just about electoral reform, but they were responding to what is happening to the country. They are responding to their voices not being heard. They are also responding to their views are actually something that matters. So, but after the election, there seems to be a bit of a lull, and civil society will have to push again for that kind of participation, because there will be up and down in terms of people's participation.
Right. Maybe you're all taking a well-deserved break from all that participation. But you're saying we'll have to come back and we'll have to be invested in this process.
Yes.
Thank you so much, all of you, for being with me today. I've been speaking to Maria Chin Abdullah, MP for Petaling Jaya, also Pak Hadar Gumai, former Election Commissioner of Indonesia, and also that Dr. Yaakob Tobing, President of Institute Lamina. They have been here talking about electoral reform, something we're going to be coming back to again and again on Let's Talk with Mishra Kutin, only on Astro Wani.